How can you achieve and maintain business growth? Harvard Business School Executive Education is now accepting applications for a new program, Driving Profitable Growth. Taking place in Boston from October 25th through the 28th, this program focuses on business expansion and organizational growth strategies that can lead your company into the future. Learn more about this three-day program for senior leaders by visiting hbs.me/growth. That's hbs.me/growth.
You are Locked On Lakers, your daily podcast on the Los Angeles Lakers. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team, every day.
Welcome, everybody, to the Locked On Lakers podcast. I'm Anthony Irwin. I'm joined by Harrison Fagan. In a little bit, we're going to be joined by Josh Lloyd. Harrison is trying to throw me off now because that was my third attempt.
I mean, you've only messed up the intro within the opening sentence twice before we recorded this.
As per usual, the nothing but professional intro to this episode, as you have come to expect from this show. As always, find the show on Audioboom, iTunes, Silver Screen and Roll, TuneIn, Stitcher, and Today's Fast Break. Use those promo codes on SeatGeek. It is LO Lakers. On Mac Welding, it is LO Lakers. I think blueapron.com/LockedOnLakers. All of those good things. Keep using those promo codes. Today's show is going to be a fantasy basketball, what you need to know about these Lakers. Josh is... I don't throw this word out there very often, but he is what I would consider an expert. He breaks these things down statistically. He compares them year over year. Just a ton of great information. So
yeah, and as with most experts, I do appreciate that he doesn't call himself coach. You'll notice that's like a theme with people who actually know their stuff.
Yeah, I would tend to agree. He is at Red Rock B-Ball. He hosts Locked On Fantasy Basketball, so Fantasy NBA. So that's going to be that. We've already had that conversation. It's a lot of fun. Before we get to that conversation, we are going to really quickly talk about the latest surrounding our Los Angeles Lakers. And it is pretty much centered on Lamar Odom. He sat down with the Verticals, Shams Charania. Yeah, and he it was a lot of the same stuff that you've been hearing about Lamar Odom. I thought the tidbit about, you know, his career essentially being over as soon as the Lakers traded him, that felt kind of heavy, but I would also tend to believe it, right? Like, because his timeline...
It's not inaccurate.
Yeah, his timeline matches up very well with how that all transpired. And once the Lakers traded him, he, you know, people in Dallas do not particularly like Lamar Odom. And, you know, I believe they all voted to not give him a playoff stipend. Was that how that played out?
So playoff share, but yes.
Yeah. And so, you know, that very rarely happens. And, for somebody who was having the troubles that Lamar Odom was, you know, maybe he wasn't forthcoming about what was going on while he was out there, but all of that notwithstanding, Lamar is probably one of the five most popular Lakers of all time. Would you?
Five feels high. I don't know if five is accurate, but he's up there. And in terms of just fan favorites, not even really necessarily related to what they did on the basketball court, just as a person, he's definitely up there as well. And I think that's the bigger one. And I think a lot of people care about Lamar more than, you know, they do about other just kind of random guys that have come in here, just because he seemed like such a genuine good dude who had to go through just a lot in his life. And it was really cool to hear that the Lakers, when they were bringing him in around the draft, they were kind of quiet about what exactly was going on. And, you know, Lamar said that they were willing to bring him in as a player development coach. And he's not quite ready for that yet. But that's cool to hear that the organization kind of reached out to him and extended the olive branch that way with his old teammate Luke Walton as their head coach now. And you know, I thought it was cool to hear him say, especially him of all people, to say Lonzo Ball is going to be special with how kind of special Lamar was in his own way as a player. Just like we hadn't seen a 7-footer dribble and pass the way that he had really before him. And, you know, and then the Lakers, the arguably the biggest thing was that they were talking about they might even sign him so that he can retire with the franchise. And I just thought all that stuff was really cool to hear, and especially as somebody who, like, is a big fan of Lamar Odom, the person.
Yeah, and look, you can go through
and the stuff player, that, but mostly the person.
You can go through stuff that he went through personally that led to those drug problems, that the addiction that he suffers with. And frankly, you know, most addicts will tell you that you fight that your entire life. So I thought, you know, just as cool as it was that the Lakers were willing to bring him in, I found it just as cool that he said, no, I'm not quite ready there. I can't jump into and I won't jump into his head. But when you're going to be working with youth, you not only have to make sure that you yourself are right for yourself, but for the people that you're going to be working with. And that's, you know, if that's something that Lamar took into account, that responsibility, that burden that's going to be on his shoulders, and he said, I really appreciate the offer, but I want to make sure I'm 100% before I take it, then that is, you know, that's exactly why people love Lamar the way they do, you know, because he is that kind of guy. He puts himself second, and by all accounts. And he is, like you said, just one of the most genuine dudes, just nice people that, you know, will ever walk through NBA doors. He's just that cool of a person. So it's first and foremost great to see him doing as well as he's been doing. After that, you get into the relationship that he's been able to maintain with the Lakers, and them thinking about, you know, he wants to sign one last contract with them, or they're working together to try to work that out so that he can retire as a Laker. I think that'd be really cool. But first, foremost, and every step thereafter is make sure this guy is 100% for as long as we can possibly keep him here, because he's one of those people who the world is better off with him in it.
Yeah, and I mean, if we're being real, the world probably it's kind of an upset that he is still in the world.
Oh, absolutely.
It was not looking good for him for a while there. But when that Vegas thing went down and he was in the hospital and Kobe ended up leaving that Lakers preseason game early because it looked like everybody was going to have to say their last goodbyes to Lamar because he was in a coma. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the lead up to that was very clearly, you know, his struggles with addiction, but it was also mental health problems. And as somebody who has struggled with those myself at various times in my life, like, it's no joke. And I just, like, I'm glad that it sounds like he's doing better. And it's just, like, people should keep in mind that when you're going through that stuff, it's really important to reach out and get help from anyone that you can. Just reach out and talk about it. People care about you.
Absolutely. 100%. I'm not even going to try to add anything to that because I can't. We're going to throw to the conversation that we had with Josh. It was a fun one. It was much lighter than this.
Way lighter than this.
way lighter. But
I was not expecting, you know, we just wanted to talk about this. We're both Lamar fans, and, you know, but like the Locked On Fantasy stuff, it will have all of your fantasy info. So I apologize if you were upset by us talking about this. Actually, no, I'm not really.
No,
I'm sorry.
No,
but,
I'm not sorry at all. Nobody should be sorry. If you're sorry, if you're upset that we talked about Lamar Odom, we're happy for Lamar Odom, and that we care about other people's, you know, potential mental battles that they go through, then you maybe shouldn't be listening to this podcast. All right, so let's throw the
us having told you to go away all out of the way. Let's get into the interview with Josh, who I think, you know, you and I talked about him a little bit before, but is definitely the most, like, knowledgeable fantasy basketball podcast that I am aware of. And I don't really even think it's close.
Yeah, it's just a ton of great information. He has a super sexy Australian accent that he says is the reason why you should subscribe to that show. And frankly, I can't disagree. So he gave his thoughts on the Lakers. Harrison and I fancy myself not an expert by any stretch of the imagination, but I have been playing fantasy basketball. I do play fantasy basketball. Maybe we should put together a Locked On Lakers fantasy basketball league.
Yeah, I think that would be a good idea. Let's try and brainstorm that and figure out, like, a way to do it.
Off air. All right, so We're going to throw to Josh.
So Locked On NBA, make sure you check it out. It's on iTunes and pretty much every other podcasting thing that you would want to use. Just Locked On NBA. He's Josh Lloyd, and we're going to talk to him now.
Actually, it's Locked On Fantasy NBA. Locked On NBA.
Oh, God.
But hey.
I'm giving a free plug to our boss, too.
Yeah.
I can't believe I just messed that up.
We're
going to
stop
Josh.
Talking now.
Hello, and welcome to the Locked On Fantasy Basketball podcast brought to you by Basketball Monster. My name is Josh Lloyd, and as always, you can find me on Twitter at @RedRock_Bball. We are back to do another season preview podcast. I think this is one that plenty of people are going to be interested in because there's a lot of interesting situations and scenarios and new players and new surroundings for a lot of the guys on this team. We're going to be talking about the Los Angeles Lakers in today's show. And to talk about everything that's been going on with the Los Angeles Lakers, I'm joined by the co-hosts of the Locked On Lakers podcast, Anthony Irwin and Harrison Fagan. Welcome, guys. Anthony, I'll start with you. Welcome back.
It's been way too long, Josh. How you doing?
I'm good. Harrison, good to have you back on as well.
Yeah, thanks for having us. It's always fun to talk fantasy.
And I guess the Lakers this year, in terms of their fantasy value, are going to be a lot different to last season. Not that they didn't have value in some guys, but we're talking about a whole new bunch of players, guys who could be taking steps forward, former All-Stars joining the squad, hyped rookies, lots of different things happening with this Lakers team. So we'll start off just in what we do on all the shows, is just start by looking at who has joined the team, and we'll talk about all those guys. Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, we'll start with him. He's everyone thought he was going back to the Pistons. He was going to be signed to a $100 million deal, but then they acquired Avery Bradley, renounced his rights, and the Lakers got him on a, I think you'd both agree, a pretty reasonable one-year deal that preserves cap space for next year, and maybe if they strike out on some of their targets they're looking at next season, they can re-sign him. But in terms of this year, KCP is a great signing, Anthony.
I would tend to agree. He'll probably be more valuable than the last guy they had at $24 million a year. So that's it. That's a pretty good start. But yeah, I mean, the big thing with KCP, there were questions about D'Angelo Russell and Lonzo Ball's fit. Can they both work? You know, can one guy work off of the ball well enough? Can they gel well enough and develop a decent enough relationship on the basketball court to make it work? This is more of your prototypical shooting guard, while Lonzo's going to dominate the ball. And I think that's what, you know, Magic and Luke and everybody in the Lakers front office wanted from somebody who's going to play in the backcourt with Lonzo.
So in terms of Kentavious Caldwell-Pope and his fantasy value, he's a bit of a weird one in terms of fantasy value because he doesn't do much. Like he scores and he hits some threes, and he's going to have that similar opportunity. But Harrison, do you see much changing from what his role was in Detroit to versus what it's going to be in Los Angeles? Because personally, I don't see much different. He's going to be a guy that plays great defense. That doesn't always translate into good steal numbers, but he's going to take a bunch of threes. He's going to take a lot of shots, which is what he did in Detroit. But in terms of the other parts of his game, his rebounding, his assists, his role, is it going to be much different, do you think, in this Luke Walton system?
You know, I kind of tend to agree with you, and I think maybe it would have been a little bit different last year with kind of a less established team and a less established style of play. But I think after a year of Luke Walton kind of establishing like how much he wants the ball to move, and then bringing in a guy in Lonzo Ball who pretty much only wants to move the ball and is, like we've already seen at multiple levels, how infectious his passing is, that maybe his role won't change much from what it was with the Pistons. I guess the only thing that I'd say, maybe he might start getting some more shots, because the one thing that we did see from the team last year was that Luke Walton does like to rely on his veterans, sometimes a little bit too much, and give them maybe more like as many possessions as they would deserve if all things were being equal. But on a young team, maybe not, maybe they should scale it back a little bit. Like we saw that with Lou Williams, and we saw that with like Nick Young a little bit, even though I guess he was mostly just shooting the lights out. But I think there's a small chance that, you know, Caldwell-Pope gets a couple extra possessions a game just out of his veteran status. But overall, I wouldn't expect a drastic change from how he was playing with the Pistons, no.
He's currently being drafted just inside the top 100, and to me that's probably a little bit too high, maybe 10 or 20 spots too high. And part of that is because I think we've seen what his ceiling is. And as I said, look, he could score 15 a game or 16 a game and hit 2.5 threes, but he's just not going to start. You're not going to end up with 6 boards and 4 assists and 1.7 steals and start shooting at 47%. Like, this is just not what we've seen. He's in his 5th season now. This is pretty much who he is. He can be that guy who adds some steals, some threes, and get some decent scoring. But I don't think a huge amount changes. And I think the bump up in his average draft position is, and this is going to be the case for a lot of these guys, it's very much Laker-driven, and this happens all the time with guys on the Lakers, guys on the Cavs, is they always go around too high, 10 spots too high, because they're on the Lakers or because they're on the Cavs, because they're on a team that gets more exposure. And I think that's going to happen to a lot of these guys, and I think Caldwell Pope is the most recent example of that. The other thing we need to remember, it's not major, but he is suspended for the first 2 games of the season. So if you're drafting him, he's not going to be able to play in those first 2 games. But that's not a huge deal, I don't think.
And I think, I think it's also important, like, the Caldwell Pope is the guy you don't want to reach for if you're drafting like if you're reaching for Lakers, because there isn't the upside there. He isn't
exactly
if you can convince yourself that maybe Lonzo Ball can average 10 assists and 10 points a game, and if your league has double doubles, then you want to reach and maybe, you know, he lives up to that fitting. But with KCP, it's going to be, you know, 13 to 16 points on decent shooting percentages, not great shooting percentages, mind you, and very little else.
You're essentially reaching just so that you can have a Laker on your team, and that was exactly when you said inside the top 100. That was my first thought, was he's a Laker, and so of course he's rated a little high. I think all these guys, I would imagine, are probably going to be rated a little high in our eyes.
That's exactly how it happens. With now, over on Basketball Monster, I've got, you know, the column that's got the Yahoo average draft position, the ESPN, and it has a green thing to say whether they're coming in, you know, their ranking is better than their draft position, or it's red to say if their draft position is too high. And basically all the Lakers, it's just red. And that happens every year for these Lakers guys.
Yeah.
With the exception of there's a couple of guys who aren't quite in that spot, which we'll talk about a little bit later, but pretty much everyone, especially towards that back end, guys like KCP, just tend to go that little bit higher. The other guy who came in who's going to have a significant impact on this team and is probably, I'd say he's definitely their best player this season, that's Brook Lopez. Anthony, I don't want to get you to talk too much about the trade that got Brook Lopez to come across. I know that is your brand at the moment, but not sure I've got that much time to go through that trade. But he did come across in the trade that
we didn't allot 20 minutes to whine about D'Angelo Russell.
I could do it myself for 20 minutes, and I've talked about it plenty. I'm very much in step with Anthony's thoughts on that D'Angelo Russell Brook Lopez trade. But let's talk about what actually arrived in Brook Lopez and what that means for him this season, how that changes his role from what it was in Brooklyn, and what it means, I guess, for the other centers on this roster.
He's going to be Brook Lopez again. He's going to be on a bad team. He's going to get, you know, touches late and shot clocks. He's going to step out and hit three-pointers like he did last year, which was a nice little benefit for those who owned him for the first season there. But really, Brook Lopez is going to trot along being Brook Lopez for the entirety of Brook Lopez's career. He's an okay fantasy player. He's a much better basketball player than he is a fantasy player. And unfortunately, like, KCP falls into that same category. And, you know, we'll see what he actually does in terms of impacting the Lakers. But I think the only guy who I would go out of my way to own this year is Lonzo. But that's, you know, Lopez, if you can get him like in the 4th or 5th round, I guess. Is that where is he going so far?
Let's have a look. He's on Yahoo it's at pick 40 and ESPN it's at pick 42. So around that end of the 3rd, start of the 4th round sort of area, which is, I think that's perfectly fine. That's exactly where he should be, in my opinion. So he's a Laker that's not overrated to me. It's pretty much right where he should be, at that 3rd, 4th round area, because we know that he's going to come in and he's going to play 30 minutes. Like, there are plenty of other center situations in the NBA where the starting center might get 26 minutes or 27 minutes, and they're not going to be locked into those numbers. But Lopez is going to come in, he's going to score, you know, potentially 20 points per game. He's going to block you over 1.5 shots per game. He's going to hit a stack of free throws. He's going to hit threes now all of a sudden. That's another part of his game, and that did impact his field goal percentage, but overall the value kept it pretty similar. The other thing, Harrison, people are always talk about Brook Lopez, and this is the standard I'm a Twitter dickhead comment. Oh, who wants a 7-footer who grabs 5 rebounds a game? You're terrible, can't grab rebounds. Now, my argument to that is, and He had 5.5 rebounds a game. That's not great. But he is also a very good box out player. And the year before, he grabbed 8 rebounds per game. So to me, that says that is very much an Atkinson thing, a Kenny Atkinson thing. Brooke, you go out there and you box out and let someone else grab the rebound. Let Trevor Booker grab the rebound. Let someone else do it. Whereas the previous seasons in Brooklyn, 7.9 and 7.4, he was grabbing rebounds. How do you see that going in Luke Walton's system? Is he going to be more aggressive grabbing those boards, or is it going to be more of a box-out situation for a Randle or a Nance to come in?
So I think it's going to be a more of a box-out situation for a few reasons. I don't really think it's for Nance, who isn't the best rebounder himself or the most prolific rebounder himself, but Randle is, and I would imagine Randle is going to start the year. And the other advantage of that is Randle can start the break. Randle can start the break by dribbling. He can start the break by outlet passing. And so there's just a lot more value in having him snatch that rebound than there is in Lopez. And the other guy that you didn't mention, but that we've mentioned a couple times already, and I'm sure we'll get into more later, but is Lonzo Ball. And we saw him when he rebounds in when he was rebounding in summer league, he wasn't even necessarily taking a dribble. He was just dropping back like he was Tom Brady and hitting Kyle Kuzma on the break. And so I think there's I don't think that it's Lopez can't at rebound. I think that they're just going to see a lot more value in him boxing out, him keeping his guy off the board so that somebody else can grab that rebound and do something a little bit more valuable with it. But from a fantasy perspective, I would say that that means that Lopez isn't necessarily going to be your most valuable rebound guy, because that helps the Lakers, but it doesn't help your fantasy team.
Yeah, and that's something that people do need to realize. It's not an ability thing necessarily with him. It's a scheme thing. And again, 1 year ago, he was getting 8 boards a game. So it's not like he can't do it. It's definitely a scheme thing, and everything that you said there makes sense in terms of those guys being able to do those other things. The other players who joined the Lakers in this offseason, there's not a huge amount to talk about. Alex Caruso, Summer League darling, signed a two-way contract, and then they've got a bunch of other guys who I guess are going to be competing for that last roster spot. Vander Blue, Briante Weber, and Steven Zimmerman. Anthony, who do you think gets that last roster spot out of those guys?
Are we going to pretend that Anthony knows who the last two are?
No, I know who Briante Weber is. Steven Zimmerman, you could have made him up. But Briante Weber, like, he's the guy who I think I would most be interested in the Lakers picking up in terms of Vanderbilt has had his chance with the Lakers. It's cool that he's stuck around and he's plugged away as long as he has. But I'm ready for, you know, I'd rather have an open roster spot, or I'd give it to Briante Weber, because the Lakers probably need a defensive backcourt mate for any time Lonzo is in there with a point guard, or any time Clarkson is in there, because Clarkson's abysmal on defense. So that's kind of who I would. I wanted to really quickly touch on the Brook Lopez thing. One last thing about the rebounding.
Yeah.
When he gets a rebound, it's not going to be as devastating for Lakers in transition as it was when Roy Hibbert got a rebound. So like Roy Hibbert was told, get in there, box out, let Randle get a rebound, let Nance could rebound when he's in there with you. And anytime Roy Hibbert got the rebound, he always landed facing the opposite direction. He took forever to find a point guard. One thing I did notice...
Fell on the ground sometimes.
He often fell flat on his face. But one thing I did notice with Brook Lopez is he is pretty good at turning his head on the catch with the rebound. And, you know, for a Laker team that's going to struggle in a half court, that slight... you know, half a second less time that the ball is in the center's hand on a rebound like that is going to help them transition, and it's going to help everybody around Lopez. And then the other thing too is, because he's better at it than Roy Hibbert was, I think Luke Walton is going to be a little bit more okay with Brook Lopez getting rebounds than he would have been had Roy Hibbert been on his team. So just a slight little thing that I noticed in watching some tape, and it made me a little bit, you know, feel a little bit better about the Lopez acquisition.
I think that Lopez is going to average more rebounds than he did last year in Brooklyn. Probably not the same amount of rebounds he averaged the year before when he got close to 8, but I think he's going to be able to get over 6 this year. Now, and I agree with all that stuff that you said. Now, Harrison, which one of you and Anthony got their Alex Caruso jersey first?
It was actually Anthony. Caruso actually threw it into the crowd to him that night because Anthony was screaming during the whole time he was lighting up De'Aaron Fox, and actually took off his shirt. And so Alex Caruso, out of like courtesy to everyone else in Anthony's section, actually threw his jersey to him and said, no, put that on. Like,
and it fit perfectly.
Totally makes sense.
It fit
that's
like a glove.
That's amazing. It's like Cinderella.
Yeah, the jersey fits. I did want to say, like, the Alex Caruso thing. So him being a two-way player, like, he's not really going to be necessarily eligible for that last roster spot right off the bat. But of the guys at the end of that list, Caruso, Blue, Reber, Zimmerman, who I swear to God you guys made up before we went on the podcast.
How about VJ Beach?
He actually does not exist.
but of all those guys, Caruso has the most intrigue to me. I like his length and I like his athleticism from a point guard spot.
So they could easily just not have anyone for that last roster spot, and then they can convert Caruso into a regular minimum contract. So that's something they can do during the season, and cut Blue, cut Zimmerman, cut Weber, and then convert Caruso into a two-way later on. That is something they can do. They've also got one two-way contract left that they can hand out. In terms of the guys that left, we already touched on D'Angelo Russell heading to the Nets. He went with Timofey Mozgov. Uncle P, Nick Young, went to the Warriors. Tariq Black went back to the Rockets. David Nwaba, who was waived, he went was picked up by the Bulls. And then Thomas Robinson, Meta World Peace, and Marcelo Huertas, currently unsigned. Now, let's get to the draft. This is the bit that everyone wanted to hear about. We want to talk about Lonzo Ball, who was drafted with the number 2 pick. He is going to be challenging Brook Lopez for the best fantasy player on this team. There's a real chance that he exceeds him. And I'm very cautious with rookies generally, but I am feeling pretty good about Lonzo Ball being able to be close to a top 50 guy this year. And it's all stuff that we've talked about. Yeah, and I'll tell you why that is, Harrison, because we feel like his assists are going to be good. Like, he's going to be getting assists. Yeah. There's no worries about him moving the ball around. He's got players who can score. Brook Lopez can score. Julius Randle can score. Kentavious Caldwell-Pope can score. So it's not like they're going to be getting the ball and just clanking it off the backboard and it's not going in. So those passes can convert into assists. But something you mentioned, he's a very aggressive rebounder. Like, he gets in there. He can average five and a half rebounds himself doing that. He is an aggressive shot blocker. He blocks shots at a high rate. He gets steals, and all those things are super valuable for fantasy. Now, his free throw percentage wasn't great, and I don't think that he's going to be able to hit 72% of his two-point shots that he did last season for UCLA. But all those other numbers, the high assists, the high rebounds, the high steals, the good blocks for a point guard, the threes, I think it adds up to him being the number one rookie for fantasy and, yeah, a potential top 50 guy. Harrison, you seem shocked by that. Like, what's shocking to that about that to you?
I mean, top 50 just sounds strong for a rookie. You make a really convincing argument. I can see it. It's just, we've seen so many times over the last couple of years with the Lakers, like, these guys get hyped up and then they come in and they hit a wall at some point. And so, yeah, that's, I don't know, top 50, I guess, like, it's probably attainable, but it caught me off guard at first, because that's just not normally something that you have associated with rookies, where they're a top 50 fantasy player in the entire NBA.
Well, we didn't have any top rookies last year in the top 50, unless you count Joel Embiid, who didn't play enough games from a total value point. But he was there the year before. We had Karl Anthony Towns as a top 20 player. Damian Lillard's been a top 50 guy. Chris Paul, Steph Curry over the last 6 to 10 years. There's been a number of point guards or big men as well with Towns who do get into that top 50. And I think Ball has got the best chance of that. Anthony, in terms of looking at his minutes, do you think that Luke Walton will be cautious with him and he might play him 28 minutes a night and give Clarkson more time handling the ball and maybe expand a role for Tyler Vance? Or do you think it's just going to be all in on Lonzo straight away? If he can handle 32, he's playing 32.
I think he'll gradually build to 32, but I don't think he'll be very far underneath it. The one thing to take into account with Lonzo is that he did have that hamstring thing at the tail end of his college career at UCLA, and then in summer league, he tweaked, what was his groin, Harrison? I think it was his groin, right?
Well, you mean when he ducked De'Aaron Fox?
Yeah. Yep. That.
It was a groin tweak.
So I'm not here saying that he is not going to be able to handle NBA minutes. I'm just saying that the Lakers are going to be cautious. One, because they aren't going to be very good, and two, because they technically kind of sort of have guys who could kind of carry the burden as his body accustoms itself to NBA, the NBA style play. But I do think, though, they are, that their top priority is going to be getting him to that 32 point a night mark. So I think, within the first month or so, he'll be up there. And it's because Magic and Rob Pelinka love nothing more than telling everybody that they're right about something. And if they have the opportunity to give Lonzo minutes and he remains in that rookie of the year conversation and you know, maybe even wins it, then they get the opportunity to tell everybody that they were right to select the guy second overall and be as excited as they were from day one as soon as they knew they had the second overall pick.
Yeah, I mean, when they drafted him, his press conference was one of the most hyperbolic I've ever
bizarre.
Seen. And Pelinka has only gone more over the top from there. Like, if Lonzo's actually good and goes out and proves it, I don't know that they're going to be able to keep it together. I think their press conferences are just going to be like them taking their shirts off and waving them around and like high-fiving each other and like flipping tables. And
They'll have a lighter for some reason, and they'll just have the white lighter waving back and forth as somebody plays Hallelujah in the background. It'll be something.
They're going to be just like preaching from the press conference thing about the greatness of Lonzo, the second coming of Kobe.
Mm-hmm. It's
magic, I guess, in this case.
Yeah, magic. Now, Harrison, I've got a question for you. In terms of Lonzo Ball's scoring ability, where do you think he will rank on this team in terms of scoring? Will he be the third highest scorer? Will he be the fifth highest scorer? Will he be the seventh highest scorer? Where do you think he fits in the pecking order in terms of just points per game?
I think as far as points per game, that's a good question. I have thought about this, but I think he's going to have the ball in his hands enough that I see him probably around second or third.
Okay. Anthony, what do you think?
I'd go fourth. I'd probably go with Ingram, Lopez.
Just to undercut me, or?
Well, I'm playing the Price is Right. So I would probably have Lopez, or Ingram, then Lopez, then KCP, then I would have Lonzo. And I could necessarily hear or make a case for Clarkson scoring more points than Lonzo. It's just going to be a really well-distributed scoring across the board for the Lakers. It's not going to be, you know, one guy is going to be dominant night in, night out in terms of their scoring. They aren't good enough. Nobody on their team is good enough to carry that kind of burden, and it wouldn't be smart for them to do it. It becomes too easy to guard a team that has or that tries to funnel all the scoring out of one guy. I think, you know, on any given night, I think you'll have nights where Lonzo goes off. I think you'll have nights where he scores 6 or 7 points. But I think at the end of the year, he finishes the year with about 13 points per game or so.
I've got my projections for every player coming out on Basketball Monster on Thursday, and I have got him projected to be the sixth highest scorer on this team, and I still have him currently two spots outside the top 50. That's how good his other categories are. I'll tell you who I've got ahead of him. I've got Lopez, I've got KCP, I've got Ingram, I've got Randall, and I've got Clarkson marginally ahead of him. And that's sort of a toss-up between Clarkson and Ball. But that's where I've got him sitting. So it's not about his scoring in terms of his fantasy value. It's what he's doing in those other areas. And I think all those other players, I could make the argument that he's the third highest scorer, but I don't think that anyone could come and say to me that I'm crazy for having Julius Randle ahead of him in terms of points per game. I think that's a reasonable thing that could happen as well. But it's, you know, it doesn't dent his overall fantasy value because it happens in all those other areas. Now, we talked about Alex Caruso and his, you know, summer league stardom, but one guy that I seriously do want to talk about is Kyle Kuzma, because we talked about Lakers hype earlier on, and after summer league finish at the start of August, in a lot of my dynasty leagues, we did rookie only drafts. Now, Kyle Kuzma was selected with pick 27, but in all four, I think, of the rookie drafts, he went at like pick 14, between 13 and 16, which seemed extraordinarily high to me. Now, obviously, he was impressive at summer league, but can you guys make a case to me as to how Kuzma is going to get significant minutes this year, or what he projects forward on this team? Because it was a great run, a great six-game performance for him in Vegas. But how is he getting minutes this year? How is he in the rotation, Anthony?
I mean, last year when we had this podcast, we went on and on and on about Ivica Zubac, right?
We did.
Yep. And this year, I'm thinking there's a way that he falls out of the rotation. This front court.
I can say that.
This front court is so crowded. And yes, Kuzma was insanely impressive in Vegas. It was great to watch. And look, if he can come in and show that he has anything close to that in training camp, then the coaching staff really has to find minutes for him. But any minutes that they find for him are going to come from guys like Larry Nance Jr., Julius Randle, Luol Deng, who's going to be vying for minutes at the four. Brandon Ingram's going to be playing minutes at the three. And you know, if he put enough muscle on himself this year, then maybe he could get minutes at the four. That it's just those that we Harrison and I dedicated a full podcast to the four spot this year, or to the front court, and unfortunately early on it looks like Kuzma's gonna have to really, you know, hope for either a move, you know, Julius Randle gets moved, or, you know, Jordan Clarkson, Lou Alding, one of those three guys gets moved, and it opens up minutes and some trickle down to him. But early on, it's going to be really tough sliding for him to find time. And that's with all that, you know, all everything that I just said, it's kind of a bummer because he was that good in Vegas.
He shot 48% from three in Vegas, insane. which is clearly not going to stick on seven attempts per game, which again is just something that I forgot what we're talking about. Yeah, Steph Curry and a power forward's body here.
I'm just getting you ready for the responses of the podcast when you say that.
Love it. Kyle Kuzma sucks. He's terrible. Who never play an NBA game. Just let's get it out of the way straight away. But yeah, people were going, they were going really hard on him. Like pick 14th best rookie, Kyle Kuzma. I'm thinking this feels crazy because he's not going to contribute much this year because of all this. Now I could see that Luol Deng, maybe he jumps ahead of Deng in the pecking order, especially as we head to February, and that's reasonable. But as we start the season, I am 100% sure that Luol Deng is going to be in the rotation ahead of Kyle Kuzma. That will change later on, and I just don't see him getting that role. And yeah, Randle, Nance, if Randle goes, then that opens up those minutes. But there's just so many bodies in that front court that we're gonna have to wait a little bit of time for him to come forward and show a lot. But he did show us enough in that time to get people excited. Now whether that seven games in Vegas against those other players in Summer League means everything, it probably doesn't, but it shows that he can at least have the chance to be good. It doesn't mean that he's going to be good, but he's going to have that ability. The other two guys the Lakers drafted in the second round were Josh Hart and Thomas Bryant. Josh Hart's an interesting one to me because his numbers all translated really well for fantasy, but in terms of his role, Harrison, how do you see him fitting in? Like, he's probably going to be more of a G League sort of a guy this year, but he is a player who I don't think it's inconceivable you could think could push Jordan Clarkson at some point in the future.
Yeah, I've liked what I've seen from Hart. I'm by no means an expert on him yet, but I do think just based on the construction of the Lakers roster, I agree with you. He's probably going to be something like, I think him and Bryant are going to be a little bit like how Zubats was last year, where they spend a lot of the first half of the year down in the D League and then, or G League now, and end up playing a little bit more regular minutes after the All-Star break when the Lakers commit more to maybe a little bit of a youth movement. And I say that knowing that they have no incentive to tank or anything like that. I just think as they get later in the year, they'll just, and they're out of playoff contention, they'll just say, hey, like, we might as well play our young guys and see what we have.
Yeah, it's not about tanking, sir. It's about developing the younger guys, and there is a difference between those two things. You're not deliberately trying to lose. You're trying to deliberately get more playing time and experience into younger guys who will help you win in the future. And that is a big difference between, you know, deliberately sabotaging wins and planning for the future. And that's, you know, it doesn't matter if they have their draft pick or not. They can't control that now. That doesn't matter to them. They just want to make sure that they can be or put themselves in the best position for the future. And I think that is something that will likely happen. Now, Anthony, the power forward position, it's always an interesting, and you said you had a whole podcast devoted to this. Julius Randle and Larry Nance are the two guys who are, I guess, in competition for that. Now, last season, we saw a lot of Nance or Randle at center lineups, with the center situation a little bit different and significantly stronger this season. How do you think that the addition of Brook Lopez, what does that mean in terms of these guys' role, Randle and Nance, and the fact that they won't be able to play as many minutes at that center position now with Lopez in town? Do you think that's a reasonable expectation that they might have their playing time cut a little bit due to that?
Well, it'll be interesting to see how they handle Lopez, because on one hand, he's under contract here and he's going to want as many minutes to earn his next deal as he can possibly get. But he also has dealt with injuries. You know, now the last couple seasons, I believe he played at least 60 games in both of those last two seasons. So, you know, it's kind of a, that flies in the face of some of those injury concerns. But big centers tend to not age all that well, and if, you know, it'll be interesting to see if Brook Lopez's agent gets in somebody's ear and says, hey, either we want more minutes or we want fewer minutes for this guy. And if he wants fewer minutes, there is no better way to change up the pace than going to a Randle Nance front court after Lopez comes off of the bench. And that's kind of why, you know, I alluded to Zubats losing out on roster on minutes this season. It's because he does all the same things as Brook Lopez, only worse. and the Lakers are going to want to get out and run anytime Lopez isn't on the court. So I think he'll probably be right in there at the 30-minute mark, 30 minutes a game, and then any minutes that are left over and any chance that they can possibly get to, you know, to stick Randall or Nance into the five spot, they're going to take that opportunity. Because, frankly, it's a more fun brand of basketball, and when the team is going to be bad, you kind of want to reward your fans with something close to fun, a fun spectacle at the very least.
And it's not even just about fun. It's a little bit. It's about up tempo, and this Lakers team might just be better when they're more up tempo. And it's not that Lopez can't play that style, but they might be better suited to play that style with a Randall Nance front court.
Now, people who listen to this podcast all the time, I think they're going to know what I'm going to say to you, Anthony, about Brook Lopez, because that narrative about him being injured is something that sticks with him. He has played in the last 3 years. He played 75 games last year. He played 73 the year before, and he played 72 the year before that. So we're talking about 3 years where he hasn't been injured, and majority of those time were just end-of-season rest, the games that he missed. Like the 73 that he played in 2015-16, I think eight of those were just rest games where they just stopped playing him in Thaddeus Young in April. Last year, he missed three games due to rest. He hasn't been hurt in 3 years, but that narrative sticks with him.
And yeah, my counterpoint would be that every Laker gets hurt.
There you go. So that could potentially happen, but it does stick with him. Like this, oh, he's always hurt. But he hasn't. He hasn't been hurt for 3 years. Yes, he did break his foot like two or three times, but that surgery, the last one was done back in 2013. So we're talking, you know, 4 years removed from that last surgery he had, and he hasn't had any issues with it. He hasn't been hurt in 3 years. Now, he could very easily go out and break his foot again, but I don't think he's really at an accelerated risk over every other player. Like Kevin Durant broke his foot twice, but we don't talk about him as a 7-foot player having a risk of always going out there and breaking his foot. But for some reason, it does persist with Lopez. And it, again, it's been 4 years since he had that surgery, and we've had no problems since then. So hopefully, for you guys' sake, that he doesn't get hurt. But it is something that always persists in people's mind. And for fantasy, that does always push him down, because people are going to be like, oh, he's injured. He's going to get injured. He was always injured. When it actually has been 3 years since he has actually been hurt at all. So I just wanted to get that out there. Now, Harrison, I'll start with you. Randall or Nance, who do you think is actually a better player at this point in their career?
I think it's definitely Randall.
Okay. Anthony?
Go ahead, Anthony.
I didn't say anything.
Oh. No, I was just asking who, just a quick one-word answer from you of who you think is the who's the better player there.
I think Randall's a better player. I think Nance is easier to build around. Or build with.
Harrison, what were you gonna say about that?
I was just gonna say I think Randall just does it. He's not as good of a defender, but I don't think that the gap is that huge. I think Nance does a lot of the little things, but I don't know that he's like that great one-on-one. And I also think that Randall offers you more rebounding and offers you a lot more on offense as long as Nance continues to be completely unwilling to shoot. If Nance was willing to let fly a little bit more, I think the conversation is a little different. But he's been so hesitant to shoot, and that gums up your offense just as much as Randall not being able to shoot.
The thing for fantasy value, Larry Nance's fantasy value is better than Randall's on a per minute basis because of his ability to get steals and blocks, and his field goal percentage is a little bit higher as well. But in terms of overall player, I can see that difference between those guys. Now, Randall, one of the things that really elevated him, especially second half of last year, but mainly over the course of the season, is the fact that he was able to bump his assists up he basically doubled his assists. He went from 1.8 assists in that 2015-16 season and had 3.6 last season. Anthony, do you think that the addition of Lonzo Ball, who's going to be orchestrating the majority of things, is going to negatively impact Randall's ability to get those assists and be that other option? Or is the fact that Ball is just so willing to spread the ball around and pass it out early and set things up, is that going to just allow Randall to maintain that ability to get those assists?
It's going to be closer to the latter there. Lonzo isn't what a lot of people think for decent reason, because most incoming point guards and most point guards who get high assist numbers tend to dominate the ball at all times whenever they possibly can. And that is not Lonzo Ball. When you watch him in Vegas, it is get the outlet pass, and then get that hit ahead as quickly as you possibly can. And that's a great thing for wings, and that's a great thing for bigs who are willing to run. It's just a matter of, you know, when Randle gets a rebound, is he going to be looking for Lonzo so that he can get the ball to Lonzo and fill a lane? Or is he going to be looking to pound the ball up the court and dribble into a shooter's defender and get that cheap assist the way he was able to get? Not cheap. Cheap is not a great way to put it. But that quick assist that he can get by just dribbling into a shooter and having... Last year it was Nick Young make three-pointers in transition. This year it would be KCP making three-pointers in transition. It'll be interesting to see how that dynamic works. But and I think early on it'll take a little while for those guys to figure these things out. And the other thing that we need to take into account here is, will Julius Randle be on the Lakers long term? You know, Magic and Rob Pelinka talk as if it's inevitable that they are going to open up two max salary spots next summer. And if that's going to be the case, they can't pay Julius Randle. They can't keep Jordan Clarkson. They probably need to move Lou Alding on top of one of those other two guys. So if that's the case, then, you know, and Julius Randle makes his way to, like, Chicago. And if he's in Chicago and there's nobody else anywhere near as good as he is on that roster, then he becomes a really valuable player. But on this Lakers team, given how crowded the front court is, given the questions about how he plays with Lonzo Ball, I'd be a little hesitant to draft him early on in the season.
Well, the problem with that is, again, that Lakers factor is a real issue here. His average draft position is 73, which is extraordinarily high considering he was the 101st ranked player last year. So we're expecting a 30 spot rise with more talent coming in around him, and, you know, the question about that fit. So to me, that is, and it's ridiculous to be wanting to get him that high, as much as you might say, oh, I want to draft Lakers or whatever. But at 73, you're expecting a guy to take a significant jump forward when the situation around him hasn't necessarily gotten any better, with other guys like Lopez coming in and Caldwell Pope and Ball coming in, who are going to take some of those numbers away from him. So again, if he's around there at around 100, that's fine, because there is a little bit of upside there to get there. But at 73, you're picking him at pretty much his ceiling, or maybe even higher than where his ceiling goes, and that's never a great way to do that. Now, Harrison, Jordan Clarkson's a guy that, you know, in his rookie season he didn't play much early, then took over, and the last 2 months of the year was fantastic. Everyone thought, oh, look at this guy, we got him in second round steal, all that sort of stuff. And at that point I was really cautious and was telling people, look, this might be the best stretch of Jordan Clarkson's career, this 2 months, so let's not read too much into it.
Those 2 months, a really fun thing to do that Anthony and I used to do on the show was search Clarkson Westbrook on Twitter and try and find the best tweets. And there were a lot of Lakers fans that thought he was going to be the next Russell Westbrook.
It's like you're not taking any context into it. There was no Kobe. There was no anyone. He was just doing literally everything for those 2 months. I said, look, this is probably going to be his best ever situation. And every year he starts to come down. He moved last year from the starting shooting guard to the backup, and then played some point guard in those weird situations at the end of the year. But how do you see him sitting this season, Harrison? I think he's going to be losing a considerable amount of the role that even he had last year with Ball and Kentavious Caldwell-Pope here. He's probably going to be the primary backup at the one and the two ahead of Tyler Ennis, but if you think something different, let me know. But I think he's going to be losing a significant chunk of the playing time and what he was doing last season.
He might lose some playing time, but I think he's still going. He might be more valuable, because when he's coming in off of the bench, now he's the primary combo guard. It's not Lou Williams anymore. So he's going to get, I would imagine, most of this year to come in and kind of be the hub of that bench offense. So I think he actually might have more value than last year. And that's not that that's like some tremendously high bar, because I don't think he had a tremendous amount of value, fantasy value last year. But I do think he'll improve from where he was last year.
So do you think that they, in terms of that guard rotation, will have Ball and Caldwell Pope starting and then have Clarkson come in? Do you think that he comes in as that first guy and then plays either alongside Ball or alongside Caldwell Pope and they rotate those three guys? Or do you think that Ennis is going to be in there as a regular member and they play Ennis-Clarkson lineups together with Clarkson strictly as that two?
I would like to say that it's going to be the former, but given Luke Walton's love of keeping the same five-man units together no matter as much as possible, I think it's probably going to be the latter.
So that's going to impact, you know, part of Clarkson's initial value early in his career was his playing point guard, and he was getting decent assist numbers, but that is something that it frustrated me, and I don't know if it frustrated you guys with Walton last year, is his complete insistence on, I've got to make sure that we've got the best bench in the league, no matter what crap we're starting. We've got to just, our bench has got to be the same, and it's got to be the best. And then you can have tweets coming out, the Lakers have got the best bench unit, they've got the highest scoring bench unit, and then he can point to it and go, look how good our bench is. But it didn't matter what happened anywhere else, and that was really frustrating to me as someone who was a fantasy person, looking at, you know, why are you just keeping this together instead of just changing something up when things are happening.
Our bench unit is killing it. They're down 30 every time they come into the game, but they're amazing.
And when they go out, they're down 20. So look at that. It's a plus 10. It's fantastic. But that really frustrated me. So you think it's going to be more of the same of that sort of stuff of, let's keep this bench unit together?
I don't know. Maybe he did learn from it. Maybe he'll do things a little bit differently last year. I'm just going off of what I saw last year. And last year, that was very much his philosophy, was that he did not want to stagger guys. He wanted to keep them together. And we've seen a little bit of that from Steve Kerr as well, where he really likes to kind of keep those, he doesn't really like to stagger Kevin Durant and Steph Curry. He likes to keep them together and things like that. So that might be a philosophical thing he started to pick up too.
Anthony, Brandon Ingram, now I've already got the people that are going to be starting hating me, that are going to be listening to this talking down the Lakers. He was atrocious for majority of the season last year, especially from a fantasy point of view. But the last 6 weeks of the season, give or take, Ingram really started to take steps forward. He had that one game in Summer League where he looked too good for everyone, which is what you hope from a second-year player. We assume that he's going to be in the starting lineup from day one. I can't see any situation that won't be happening. Where does Brandon Ingram take the biggest step forward this season, though?
Unfortunately, it's hopefully on defense. The Lakers have enough offense. Like they have Lonzo Ball is going to be a really good offensive rookie. Julius Randle is a really good offensive – well, not really good, but he's better on offense than he is on defense. Brook Lopez is a really good offensive player. Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, for what the Lakers are going to need on offense, they're going to be fine there. So what the Lakers really need from Brandon Ingram this year is to make some major steps forward defensively. And seeing as this is a fantasy basketball podcast, that doesn't necessarily always lead to anything that makes people really excited about drafting somebody. Maybe he'll get an additional steal, or a 0.7 steals this year than he had last year. Maybe he'll rebound a little bit better than he did last year. But in terms of offensive stuff and where a lot of the counting stats that matter a lot in fantasy, I don't think he's necessarily going to take huge leaps forward there just because of everything going on the court around him.
I think that's fair enough. Now, I think he is going to take a step forward this year, but I also don't think that he's going to be taking this monster leap and becoming this top 70 type of guy. Now, in order to draft him on ESPN, again, he is inside the top 100, which is ridiculous to me because I don't even know if he cracked the top 300 last year. And yeah, he's going to be better than that. But he needs to improve in numerous areas. His efficiency was terrible. He needs to get his free throw percentage up. He needs his field goal percentage up. He needs his three-point percentage up. And as you said, in terms of offensive pecking order, he's not going to be at number one. He's going to be down behind these other guys, and there's a lot of balls to be shared around. Now, in terms of his defensive stuff, do you think that he has got, maybe not this season, but moving forward, do you think he's got that triple one potential? So a guy that can hit a three a game, get a steal a game, and block one shot per game. Do you think the blocks are probably going to be the hardest thing, but do you think that that's something that he can do with his defensive ability?
Yeah, that seems very feasible. I mean,
I agree 100%.
He's so long. That it happened multiple times last season where an offensive player would get a step on him and would think that they're in the clear and they can get their shot off with no problem, and then all of a sudden they'd have a hand in their face or they'd have a hand on the ball, and so he's long enough and he's smart enough and based on everything that you hear about the kid from the Lakers, he works hard enough that I think he'll improve defensively. So the triple one stuff, it depends on how much you value that. If that's really what you're looking for from him, then sure, draft him. But you better be drafting him after like the eighth or ninth round, which I just don't think he's going to be available at that time.
Yeah, and that's the exact thing. He's going to go too high for me. He's a great pick for your last round, your second last round. But when he's going inside the top 100, that's not happening for me. But in terms of guys. I think there was only five players in the entire NBA that averaged a triple one last season, so it's not easy to get to. I wish I could remember who that. I know Draymond was one of them. I think Millsap was one of them. I don't remember. I think there was five guys that averaged that. So it's not an easy bar to get to, but I agree with both of you in terms of I think that at some point he will be able to get really close to that, if not average those triple one numbers. We talked about Zubats already, and he looked bad in summer league, didn't he, Harrison?
Awful.
At times, yeah. What happened? Like, what was different apart from, you know, compared to what we saw from him last year in summer league and at the end of the season? Like, what was the big difference? Why did he look so out of it?
I don't think he was in shape I don't think that he came into summer league as in shape as he did the year before. I think the Lakers were playing a lot faster than they were even the year before. I think that there were a lot of. I think that those were probably the main two factors, I guess, what I would say. And, you know, it's like if you look at it, his numbers weren't, I don't think, like crazily different this summer league versus last summer league. But I think the context of them was, I think people were expecting a lot more from him this year as a second year guy than they were as kind of a rookie that everybody said was going to take a lot of time to develop. And as a fan favorite who people have come to really fall in love with his potential, I think. And so, yeah, his summer league was really disappointing, and I am not really sure what it means for him going forward, because Anthony talked about he does all the things Brooke Lopez does, but worse, and I think that's somewhat accurate. And so if the Lakers do want to have a little bit of a change of pace or do things like, or, you know, just get a different look, throw a different style at teams, then he may be one of the odd men out in that big men rotation unless he comes into camp and just kills it.
The other thing, though, and I agree with that, I think he's going to struggle this season in terms of minutes. He's not going to approach what he did last year. But if the Lakers are dead set on getting these two max salary slots, which, as you said, they are, that means that Brook Lopez won't be on the team next year. That means they won't, and the two max salary guys they're getting are probably not going to be targeting a center where they're thinking it's Paul George or LeBron James as the two guys they want to be going for. So that could potentially mean, as we head to the 18-19 season, that maybe if Zubats does okay in that backup role, that he could be that starting center heading into his third season. So people who own him in long-term dynasty leagues, you're going to cop a hit this year, no doubt. But with the way that things are lining up for the Lakers, and if everything goes according to their plan, there is possibly going to be that starting center spot open for him in the 2018-19 season to take that step up. And it'll be between him and maybe Thomas Bryant or Anthony's mate, Steven Zimmerman, who could get that that center spot in 2018-19. So that spot is clear, but just remember, it's going to be a hard run of it this season as he does take a step back in role and as he gets used to, I guess, playing with these new teammates. But there could be some glimmer of hope on the horizon, depending on how everything works out. Now, Anthony, Luol Deng, go ahead.
I was just going to say, a big part of it is going to be how he handles it. And it's going to be tough, I think, to go from being a fan favorite last year to going to riding the bench a little bit more this year. But if he approaches it the right way and continues to work hard, I don't see any reason why he couldn't come in and still help the team the next year.
Yeah, and that's exactly how I'm thinking of it. Anthony, Luol Deng started last season. He was bad. Nothing to do with it being a bad contract, because it was, but his play wasn't good either. So where does he fit in this year? Is he just strictly going to be backing up Ingram? Is he going to be that third string power forward as well? Like, where do we see Luol Deng this year? Is he going to be in and out of the rotation, maybe with Corey Brewer switching into that spot?
It's really tough to figure this out, because on one hand, the Lakers are paying him so much money and you want to get any kind of return on that investment that you can. But on the other, it's really crowded. They have one of the cornerstone pieces of their franchise moving forward at the same position that he was awful at last year. And then at the four spot, it's just as crowded with three other guys, if you count Kuzma, who the Lakers are really going to be interested in getting minutes for. So for Deng, you know, does Walton have the stones to bench him right off the get-go, despite him making whatever it is, $18 million a year? That's that's not going to go over all that well in the locker room, even though that's probably what's best for the team. So, you know, I think he gets minutes early on in the season, but I don't think at any point this year will you be looking to own Luol Deng.
No, you shouldn't have been owning him last season, because he was horrendous even when he played. I think he shot like 35% from the field. I've got it here, 38.6 from the field, which is absolutely horrible, and averaged 7 points in 26 minutes, which again is disgustingly bad. So he's a guy that's, Go ahead.
On the bright side, it's not as bad as his contract. So silver linings.
That's exactly right. You got to take the positives where you can get them. Harrison, who's a breakout candidate for you on this team? And you can use whatever criteria you want to work out what breakout means.
I'm going to go ahead and say Randall. I'm actually really optimistic about what he can do this year. We talked earlier about how he could kind of pick up – he picked up his assists last year, and I think that that's going to happen again this year. I think he showed a lot of aptitude, especially as the year went on, as a passer in transition. And so I do feel like he's in for a better year than he had last year, also just having another year of experience under his belt. And I just think that playing with Lonzo Ball, it might end up being the best thing for his career.
Anthony, who's your guy?
I don't really have one because the guys who the Lakers are really looking to the guys that the Lakers are really looking to really impact their season are new guys. KCP, yep. Brook Lopez, Lonzo Ball, like those three guys, after those three guys, there isn't very much room for anybody to have, in terms of fantasy value, breakout seasons. So, you know, maybe, like, gun to my head, maybe it's Brandon Ingram. If he comes in and you know, if Jordan Clarkson is bad enough as a backup point guard or trying to be, like, that combo guard off of the bench, and Luke Walton decides, all right, fine, we'll just have Ingram bring up the ball and he'll play, you know, like that pseudo point guard, point forward kind of position, and he does well there to pick up an extra assist or two per game, great. But really, it's hard to look up and down this roster and say, yep, that guy is going to take a leap this year, because I don't think that guy exists.
In terms of value guys for fantasy, I don't think there's anyone who's a real value guy. And that's all Laker related. And these guys go too high. And conversely, guys who can potentially bust at their ADP, there's lots of them. It's Randall at 73, as much as Harrison, you think he might improve. We're talking about a 30 spot increase on a team that got better. That's a hard pill for me to swallow. KCP.
Oh, I'm not. Yeah, I guess I was thinking about it more just from overall breakout. But yeah, in terms of fantasy, I think we're probably going to talk about this, but I don't know that I would recommend drafting any Laker where you're going to have to draft them to get them.
Yeah, that's pretty much like Kentavious Caldwell-Pope. He's like 30 spots too high. I think Brandon Ingram, going at 96, that could be 30, 40 spots too high. Jordan Clarkson at 109. Like, there's no way that I want Jordan Clarkson at 109. If it's a Zubats at 130, like, well, I don't know what's going on there. Like, why are we picking these guys at these high? And it's because they're Lakers players. Now, the one guy that I think is a potential guy, like Lonzo Ball's ADP is 53 on Yahoo. And I've seen him slide to like 70 or 65. And if he's sliding past 60, then I'm taking him in that sort of a spot. Now, there'll be literally some leagues where he goes inside the top 20, and I've seen it already, and that is ridiculous. Like, that is just I am a big baller, and I'm sticking with my brand. That's all that is.
LeVar's drafting him quite a bit, huh?
LeVar is omnipresent in fantasy mock drafts. He's everywhere. He's taking him all over the place. But I've been in somewhere.
He just loves seeing his son get drafted, so he just runs draft simulations all day, mm-hmm. And then parties again.
I know that's a joke, but it's not. Like, you could actually see that happening.
No,
you could
see totally him celebrating.
It could totally happen. But look, his ADP is 53, but on Yahoo in their initial ranks, he's 81. So there are situations where Lonzo slides, and if he's sliding outside the top 60, I'm more than happy to take a risk on him at that point, because it is a risk, because we don't know exactly if he's going to be good in the NBA, but everything's telling us that he probably will be, and he'll be a good fantasy contributor. So to me, he's one of those guys that you might be able to get a bit of value on. I think Brook Lopez is decent at where he gets drafted, and you're not necessarily looking at significant upside for guys in round three. If he just gives you that same value back, then you're really happy with it, and I think you should feel confident with that. But those back end guys, they're all going 30, 40 spots too high, which if they were back at the end of your draft, I'd be more than happy. But if you have to reach inside the top 100, that's just not something that I'm all that keen on. I think we've covered most players on this team now, unless anyone's got anything insightful to say about Corey Brewer.
He's
going to run a lot and try really hard.
Yeah, well, Brewer, like, if you had one guy on this roster who you would kind of want in transition with Lonzo, it's Brewer, right? It's just somebody who literally beats everybody up the court every single chance he can. And so, you know, maybe he'll get a few dunks or get Lonzo Ball a couple cheap assists, every fourth game or whatever, however often they're on the court together. But The one thing I was going to say about Lonzo, the two guys who, if I was telling people, all right, these are Lakers who I feel comfortable telling you to draft, it's Brook Lopez and it's Lonzo Ball.
Yep.
After that, there are just so many questions, whether it's minutes or whatever. But the nice thing with Lonzo Ball is, and we talked about this earlier, about how he's not going to be, you know, you have him as the, what, sixth highest scorer? Was it sixth or fifth?
So, yes, yeah, I had him sixth there.
Like, I'd feel a lot worse about drafting Lonzo if you were relying on his scoring, right? If people were hoping, you know, to draft Lonzo Ball and have him be like a 15 to 17 point per night scorer, then I'd be a little concerned. I'd tell you, you know, pump the brakes there. But because of the way he plays, because of how smart he is on a basketball court, those other stats, those non-scoring stats that he puts up, are going to be a lot more consistent than a rookie who you rely to for scoring.
Yeah, that's why, yeah, I think he's going to have the better rookie season fantasy-wise, especially than Markel Fultz, because Fultz is more going to be reliant on that scoring, and then he has to deal with, you know, Joel Embiid taking his shots and Ben Simmons taking his shots. Whereas, you know, Ball, it's the other stats that are really going to elevate what his fantasy value is, and that's exactly how I see it in terms of Ball and Lopez being those two Lakers who I think are going to be good fantasy. The other guys could have value, but it's all about where you can get them. Now, guys, today the Vegas released some over-unders for the season. We did have some early ones back in July, but they released the new ones today. So I'm going to get you guys to give me whether you're going to take the over-under on this. We've also got Kevin Pelton's ESPN win projection, which comes in very similar to this. The Vegas over-under for the Lakers this season is 33.5. Pelton projected them at 33 wins. Harrison, do you take the over or under?
I hammer the under.
Anthony?
I probably take the under, but I'm higher on at the possibility of them going over than Harrison probably is.
Now, Harrison, would you say that it's a fair assessment that, much like the fantasy draft positions of the Lakers players, that hammering the under on the Lakers over-under is generally a pretty good way to go?
Yes, I would, because people always overrate the Lakers. There are just so many fans, and I get it. Like, that's what fans do. Fans want to be excited about their team. I totally understand. But I'm here to, I guess, ruin your day.
Yep, that's all we can expect from
you. I think
you,
that's actually in my contract with Locked On Network, is ruin Lakers fans' days. So, sorry, guys.
Well, luckily you host the Locked On Lakers podcast, so there won't be many of them that are too disappointed in that. That's always good to hear. I think I would take the under as well. Maybe 30, 31 is where I see them at. I haven't gone through and projected everyone's total wins out yet, but that's how I see that happening. So, yeah, I think the under is a very good way to go on Lakers totals pretty much every season. Now, guys, what have you got coming up on Locked On Lakers, or any of your writing that you've got coming out? Anything, we'll start with you. Anything you want to give a cheap plug to?
Well, on Locked On Lakers, we might have a pretty fun guest lined up for Friday's show. We might be able to. I don't like to call my shot there, because if it doesn't fall through, then people are like, to whoever the guest.
You mean if it does fall through?
Or yeah,
is it Byron Scott?
It is not.
See, if you were a co-host of the show, you would have been fine for saying that. Anthony just learned that the hard way.
but in terms of writing and stuff like that, no, not really. The big thing is that we're getting closer to training camp. So as we get closer, excitement kind of starts brewing around this team. It sounds like we're really low, because we hammered the under on the Vegas projections. There's only two guys that I feel comfortable telling people to draft in terms of fantasy value. But this is the best Lakers team that they've had in about 5 years, which isn't saying anything. It's an extremely low bar, but it's going to be, you know, it's going to be a lot more fun this year rooting for this team than it has been in recent seasons. So at least we have that going for us.
Harrison, you got anything that you need to plug?
No, I think Anthony plugged all of our stuff. Just listen to the podcast. Find us on iTunes if you enjoyed this. If you liked me sarcastically making fun of Anthony after basically just about everything he said, that's pretty much, I think that's the iTunes summary of our podcast. So, yeah. I mean, we try to have fun. We try to bring insight while still having a good time. Like, we don't take ourselves too seriously, and we don't take basketball too seriously. So we don't. You know, it's a little bit less serious than maybe some podcasts that you've heard, but we try to have a good time with it, and we try to bring a little bit of insight too.
Yeah, I can definitely attest to that. They got, these guys have a lot of fun on the show. It's always it's informative and with good humor, which is, I think, the perfect mix that you want on a podcast, and something that I'm always striving to get there. As someone commented to me the other day that, you know, I know my stuff, but you're about as funny as a fart in a pickle jar, and I don't actually know what that means, but it's something. It's a comment. And
I actually hate pickles, so that might improve a pickle jar.
you never know. I'm not about to try it.
Since we're doing this as kind of a crossover show, why don't you go ahead and tell our listeners that are listening to this why they should listen to Locked On Fantasy, if this wasn't a good enough argument already?
Well, you should listen to it because I have an Australian accent. That's number one. That's clearly my number one selling point. Apart from that, there's no debating that. I do this every day of the season, reviewing what's happened during the day, predicting what's going to happen the next day for seasonal fantasy leagues, trades, pickups, and for daily fantasy, setting lineups and that sort of stuff. And lots of listeners have had lots of success with it, so that means that maybe I'm getting some things right. But that'll be my number one argument for listening to this podcast.
I can't disagree. I wish I had an Australian accent. I'm gonna start working on it.
We should work on that this year, and hopefully not lose all of our guests by how offensive it is.
How many Australian listeners do you have? Do you have a decent chunk, or you've never looked at that?
I've looked at it. We Locked On Lakers gets decent support in Australia. You know, shout out to our Australian listeners. I don't want to call them fans. I don't feel like anybody should be a fan of me, but I think listeners and friends is accurate. And we do have a fair amount of Australian support, so that is actually pretty cool to know that we're making it all the way over there.
Yeah, there's a lot of NBA, a lot of thirst for NBA knowledge over here. As obviously, you can tell because I'm doing this as my job, but there's plenty of people here that are into the NBA. So it is a pretty interesting market that is always it seems to always be growing as well. But I've kept you guys long enough today, so we'll wrap this up. Just to give us your Twitter handle so people can follow you there for D'Angelo Russell trade discussions and I guess Harrison. What's your Twitter brand? Would you say, Harrison?
My Twitter brand is people, anytime I'm in a photo, they Photoshop a giraffe of me, they Photoshop a giraffe picture over my head, or they say that a friend of the podcast, Laker Film Room, is my stepdad. So,
okay.
Long story there you go.
We also have to add to that complaining about his time at Cal State Fullerton. Like there,
I feel like I don't complain on Twitter about that much.
Every fifth tweet or so, it's I'm still here in the newsroom. It's 11 o'clock. So.
To be honest, I did see a tweet about that from you yesterday. Oh, I think it was yesterday. Maybe you didn't tweet it yesterday, but I did see something about it. I did, but that was one tweet because I was looking through Lakers tweets and I saw your name pop up and there was something about still stuck here in the newsroom. Right? Okay, cool. And it stuck in my head and there we go. So you are building that brand and that's
so my brand
that's
is complaining and giraffe Photoshop.
There we go. So go and follow these guys on Twitter. Anthony, what's your Twitter handle?
I am at Anthony Irwin LA.
And Harrison?
I am at HM Fagan.
All right, cool. That's it, guys. Follow me on Twitter at redrock_bball. We are done here. Thank you so much for listening, everyone.